to a podcast greater than yourself, season 5. Thank you for listening. Do you have a question about sobriety, the 12 steps, sponsorship, or just want to contact someone from the podcast? Email us at podcastgreaterthanyourself@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at dr_silkworth or a podcast greater than yourself. If you're enjoying the podcast, please give us a rating on your podcast app and share the show with anyone who may benefit.
Okay.
Shake it off.
Welcome back to Podcast Greater Than Yourself. My name is John Barleycorn, and my co-host today is, I almost said your, not fake name, Jane.
Hi.
Not Jane Barleycorn, just Jane.
No, that would be weird.
Yeah, well, there was going to be a Jane Barleycorn situation at one point, and then you chose Jane and kind of screw that up, so.
Oh, did I take somebody's name?
My wife was going to be on the show. It was Jane Barleycorn.
Oh, no. Sorry, Jane Barleycorn.
I'm just introducing chaos with this pointless anecdote right now.
Jane, not to be
like two Janes. Yeah, I feel like two Janes can exist in the planet.
No.
I'm just saying. No?
Well, that's why it would be Jane and Jane Barleycorn. I think it'd be fun. Yeah. It was B from NZ. That was his idea. So thank you for joining us, everyone. We'll see you next week. No, with us for this burning desire is our lovely friend Millie.
Welcome. G'day.
How are you?
I had to say g'day. I don't ever say it in real world, but I had to say it here.
Really?
G'day, how's it going?
Do you really never? Because I do.
Never.
I say it like in Teams chats at work. Does that count as real world?
Yeah. Do you type it or say it?
Oh, I mean, it's a Teams chat. I guess I type it.
Mm.
How do you type it? If you were to type it.
Number one.
How would you
G type? Apostrophe day. G'day.
Right. Now, is
not G-I-D-D-A-Y. That's terrible.
That's scary.
That's a plight against my country. It's G-apostrophe D-A-Y.
Even
I can see that. Yes. That's the choice of my burning
right.
desire.
Even
actually,
I know that's pejorative. Yes. Absolutely. So, Millie, I am not one to comment on people's physiognomy or physical appearance in general, but...
Oh, God.
I feel like you have sexy movie star 80s bed hair, like post-sex hair going on today?
I mean, that's a very personal question about my life. I did just come off set.
When we were going through the headphone debacle and like the last time you took them off, I was like, this is a move. This is either like literally you literally did just wake up or... It was like, this is prepped to like be a lady in red kind of situation.
John Barleycorn, it is 10 a.m. on a Sunday. I absolutely just woke up. Absolutely.
I love it. I love
this is my church.
I love that there are people who, yes, I love that there are people who can sleep that late still, like have the ability to do it.
Oh, I can't. I was lying in bed ruminating about life, but you know.
Okay, was this?
One does.
Was the phone involved?
No.
Okay.
Just my brain.
That's amazing.
Yeah, my brain.
Just
yeah,
some.
Good morning.
Just some bed ruminating without the phone.
I do it because every morning, right? I wake up and I have a series of alarms that are like my intervention points to make me participate in the world.
Amazing.
And every single morning, I know myself very well. I have to hack it by doing at least an hour's worth of alarms because I lie there and I try to negotiate with myself a further sleep. And I never actually sleep, but I negotiate it every morning and I think it's going to happen and I try. And so I lie there and I just will myself to sleep and then don't sleep every morning.
Yeah,
this is my glimpse into my life.
Did we, was it, Was it on,
On Awakening? It's like the B side of On Awakening. It's just wake up and obsess about not being awake, and right. then connect with the high power. That's what I do.
I think we had a conversation at some point about who had like the most alarms in their phone.
Ooh.
Or that may have been in like a big group chat. But somebody sent a picture, but like a screen recording of their alarm. There was like 70 alarms on their phone. Like, what are you doing?
I could compete. And my alarm has stats that tells you how often you snooze. And I had one morning where I snoozed 39 times. What? I pressed snooze 39 times.
At that point, it's not snooze. You're just like literally rescheduling your entire life.
It's true. I feel like this is confessional radio now. Just telling all my terrible secrets.
I accidentally set the tone with this.
This is not interesting, by the way. Why am I talking for 4.5 hours about my morning alarms? Come on.
This is what people come for their burning desire for. They're just like,
keep me on topic.
Give me the relatable stuff. Now, give me 5 minutes on elevators now. Elevators, airline food. Hey.
See, the way I'm wired as a person is you give me a topic and I will absolutely do a TED talk on it. Like, I'm down. I am ready. I could give a presentation. I could pull together some slides. I could do any topic in the universe.
You're setting me up for the segue.
Any topic. I am.
And on that note, what do you have for us today?
What are we actually here for? Right.
You've got a cuppo. It's the morno.
I do. Both those words are terms we do not say, but called cuppa. It's cuppa with an A.
Cuppa
and just morning.
I'm only interested in like fake borderline pejorative Australian slangs. Yeah. And
I just really like
aphorisms.
To create tension between our countries. I'm into it.
It's up to us to divide these continents further. So what are we talking about?
47 minutes in. Let's do this. All right. So my burning desire is get your hands off other people's spiritual experiences.
Mm.
Get your hands off.
Get them off.
I like it.
That's my burning desire. I will soapbox that. I will get on it and I will be passionate. And not just about AA. This is about life, right? This is literally, we all have this beautiful, magical, weird life to live. And I don't know what we are. I don't know what I was created to be. I'm not going to get into that detail. No one needs to hear my random opinions about that. But like, we all have our own pathways and our own experiences to like tread in this weird world. And part of these steps, like we get to work with messy versions of us, like just that hopelessness and that complete despair and that total disconnect. And we get to help plug them in. We get to be that temporary bridge between them and the universe, them and God, like whatever it is. And that's an amazing privilege and experience. But don't get into the details of it. Don't start telling them what God is. Don't start telling them about the details of their life, the decisions, what they should do with their families, their lives, like, you know, their own weird character defects that come out as a part of this process. Like, our job is to like put these tools at their feet and then watch the magic. And we all have an incredible individual experience ahead of us if we follow this way of life. But you just can't get your fingers and your mucky little hands into the details of someone's own beautiful experience. And I don't know about you guys, but I see that again and again in the rooms. Oh, and yeah. I've been guilty of it, like for sure. Like, I literally gave amends to a bunch of early sponsees because I was like, fuck, I am like telling them what to do, or I'm telling them, oh, that's not right. Or I'm telling them about, you know, their different defects, or I'm giving them these weird kind of commentaries on who they are in the world. And it's like, that's got nothing to do with the detail of what we're doing here. Like, as fellow humans, like, get your hands off other people's spiritual lives, like let them have it. Like, we get to be part of it, but don't like have an idea about what it looks like and what, you know, like what success looks like and what this weird emotional sobriety concept is supposed to be. Like, get your hands off it. Yeah. All right. That's my rant. Whew,
I love it.
Pressure rose.
It's great.
Yeah?
My question right off the top is, what are we calling this episode? Like, Lego my ego. No, hands off. I love that you give me the opportunity to title an episode, "Get Your Hands Off My Spiritual Experience."
Yeah, in capital letters.
Yes, all caps. All caps. Rant. I love it. Yeah. It's great. This is something I talk about often.
Yeah, and I feel like I know for me, I've had experiences of being on both sides of it. I've had people give me a lot of weird opinions about me and my life. Sure. And then I've been the person giving opinions. And it's messy and you get really involved. And like all of a sudden I'm stressing about someone else's marriage, or I'm stressing about like, you know, their problems, and they're talking to me and I'm doing this weird version of unqualified life coaching. Yeah. I work in the corporate world. Nobody needs me life coaching them. Like it's a funny little space. And it's like, actually, that's not the point. Like, that's really not the point. We have a genuinely simple program that has this like lifetime of unraveling ahead of us, but the unraveling is internal with kind of an external imprint. Like the internal stuff is the magic, and it's between me and God. And that's a phenomenal opportunity. And I get to share that with people. Like, I know Jane, we chat on the regular. Like, she knows a lot of my weird personal shit. Like, but it's an invitation in. It's not, you know, like, you don't tell me what to do or, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, it's, I don't know, I just feel like it's such a weird culture of getting, like, great, now we're so bad. Now we're going to start judging that person for their dishonesty, or we're going to start judging that person because of the way they run their business, or blah blah blah. And it's like, what is going, we end up in this weird kind of support group kind of context sometimes. And it's like, I'm really glad that I've stopped drinking, and now I'm obsessed with my own character defects because that's all we talk about. It's weird,
right?
Yeah Millie mentioned that, like, you know, me and her have a friendship. And, you know, the reason I let her in was because I just had this, like, you know, kind of a bummer of an experience at a meeting. And I was just like, I need to send a 10 step to somebody about this. And so I wrote it and I was like, hey, I know we just met, can I send you a 10 step? And she was like, yeah, sure. And it was just beautiful. And like, yeah, she didn't tell me what to do. She didn't like try to manage my life or tell me that I'd been wrong. She was just like, oh yeah, I've had this experience. Let me tell you what it was like for me. I feel like all of her feedback is like that when I send her 10 steps. It's just like, well, here, let me tell you what this looks like for me. Hmm. And that's where you can get a conversation going. Cause then I can be like, well, it's kind of like that for me, but not really. It's like this other, like you want to open up to somebody like that. Hmm. Whereas if she were just like, well, what you need to be doing, I'd be like, okay, well, you can get lost. I don't fucking care.
Right. The interesting thing, though, in a lot of sponsorship, it's, well, obviously is slightly different dynamic than what you're talking about, but what I keep thinking about is a lot of sponsorship situations I find myself in with people, not so much like brand new people, but with people who have like been in and out or at least around the fellowship, you know, for a considerable time. It's like they want that. Like they've, and I don't know if it's by virtue of having been misled to like just like think that a sponsor is supposed to make decisions for you and stuff, or that, you know, maybe it could be that you like go to these meetings and everyone in the meeting tells everyone in the meeting what to fucking do with every part of their life, right? Or if it's a situation where it's like because of all that stuff in the fellowship and the culture of like, you know, support in quotes, that they've grown accustomed to it. And it's like, I need that, like, to be comfortable. I need someone to be kind of like blanketing me or like bolstering me somehow. And the experiences that I have with that often look like somebody just being like, I feel like they'll kind of hint around it. They'll be like, well, you know, what sort of things do you want me to do? And this and that. And they ask about like what kind of meetings and like what this, what that, you know, should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? And it's like, we're already doing the only thing I'm going to like give you any kind of instruction with. And it's like, it's just the stuff. And like, the whole thing is you're going to have your own experience, like you said, which I love that. I love, like, this is individual experience. Jane's heard me say that 7,000 times, I'm sure. So I was like, yeah, you're setting off all my alarms and you're saying that. But, like, you're also it's like you're missing what the thing is. You're just gonna do this thing, and then this other thing will happen where you're like, oh, now I have this thing where like I don't need to ask people to like make decisions for me, you know. But it's kind of like, how do you talk to someone in a way that conveys that effectively and meaningfully enough for them to like bite, when it's like all they've known is that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, it's all people know in recovery, unfortunately, a lot of the time. And it's a lot of what people know in unrecovery as well. Like, as you're talking, I was thinking, like, when I was in active alcoholism, surrounding myself with people who would make decisions for me was like what I did. Like, and it was comfortable for me. I would say one of the biggest challenges in recovery has been being able to make my own decisions and, like, you know, having this thing that I can like rely on and trust so that I know I'm making the right decisions has been like, you know, it's made the whole difference for me. If I had just got into another state where I'm like still letting people make decisions for me, but just not drinking, that's like, what's the point?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And it's the crazy moment when you sit there in your own life and you reflect and you realize, I know for me, my intuition is almost palpable. I can feel it. Like, I can feel a sense of my own inner voice. And that's that God energy flowing in a practical way in my life. Like, that whole, you know, that line about, you know, we know how to deal with situations that used to baffle us. Like, that absolutely comes true. And more, I know for me, the process of my step 10 practice is less about what do I do? What do I do? And it's more about, oof, I just need to reflect another human in this moment. Like, I don't necessarily need someone to tell me what to do, because there is often, it's just wait, pause, look, listen for the God, seek the intuition, like, you know, kind of recognize what's going on. And the more that grows, the more it's like, oh, this is the stuff. This is like this is what I was hoping to find. Like, when I would go into my blind panics. And I have a really strong memory of coming in as a complete train wreck. My life was absolute chaos. And there's a difference between this, you know, get your hands off your spiritual experiences, passion moment of mine, like from that early stages of being helpful to someone, because often they are completely swamped in all kinds of things. And our book does say, you know, sometimes you lend them money. Sometimes they stay at your houses for a few days. Sometimes we, you know, give them work, or we do what we can to make their life easier if we can, as long as our own lives aren't being sacrificed with our families and stuff. Like, it's very clear about that. Like, there is that balanced spirit of giving, like, what can I do to help this person right now? But it's not that enablement point. Like, I'm not becoming the new God for them. Like, we're helping them build the bridge to that God. Like, we're helping them, and it's a clumsy bridge. It's got structures in place at first. They're learning it. It's new. They're tentatively putting their feet on this pathway. All the other analogies about bridge building that I'm not qualified to make, but like, it's tentative at first, but more and more the bridge for them becomes stronger and stronger, and then they can walk it on their own. And we step back like we're mama bears watching our little babies toddling across the bridge going, oh my God, he's walking. Like, it's a beautiful moment. And like, that's the magic of it. It's not the, let me tell you what to do. And I had a previous experience, you know, a number of years ago, where I had a really difficult point in my life. And I look back and I knew my intuition was screaming about that point. Like, I had an ex-partner who was very messy at the time, and I knew it was bad, but I called someone and they gave me terrible advice, like, bless her heart, terrible advice. And because I was messy at the time, I just took her word and went, okay, because I just wanted someone else to make that decision, because it's still early in that kind of God conduit space. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. And so when somebody told me what to do, I was like, oh, okay, thank you for that. I couldn't see it. I was blocked. Thank you for telling me the truth of this situation. And then reflecting back, I was like, no, that wasn't right for me. And I've had, you know, more recent experiences with people in that step 10 reflection who will listen to something I'm saying, and they'll help me plug into my own God power. Like, they'll help me and they'll explain, like, hey, have you done any two-way prayer on this? Or have you done any reflection? Have you asked, have you sought the power? Have you sought an answer? And like, they'll help prompt me in the actions to get me to God, rather than like doing a weird fake God voice on my behalf.
Right. Love it. That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a way to suggest it though, because nobody wants to send a 10 step to someone and then they're like, okay, we'll just pray on it. You got to give them something. But yeah, that's life true. Advice is also not it.
Just text them back the yellow Simpsons thumb.
The
dreaded boomer thumb.
Yeah, thumb then prayer emoji. Prayer hands and thumb.
It goes thumb, prayer hands, and then peace sign.
But it's funny though, because often that kind of is the answer, right? Like often it is like, you gotta pray this out, or you gotta like reflect on it within your own spirit. Like, I'm sorry, we all want a shortcut. I want a quick magical shortcut that like hijack, you know, like that literally just hijacks away my pain. Like take it away, like fly it off into another planet. I don't want to be uncomfortable. I don't want to be out of control. I don't want, you know, and often if I'm in a 10-step energy about that, it often is like, you gotta wait, girl, or you gotta pray, or this right. is it. This is the stuff of being human. And it's like, I love though that in this community of people, like I love connecting with you guys and others that are doing this work, that are doing this spiritual work that keeps us, you know, crazily sober, which still blows my mind. Like, what? I don't drink. Like the stuff that keeps us in this rhythm. And it's like, the more I do it and the more I'm around other people like that just are doing it, and we're all helping people together and we're all sharing notes on how to help people and blah, blah, blah. And it's like when somebody calls me with a 10 step or whatever, I'm not tempted to meddle. You know, I'm not tempted to tell them, well, you should leave that man. Like, I don't feel the need to. Like, I don't feel the need to get involved. And then in those early days as well, like that's the kind of, I guess there's two different parts of this, right? There's the 10th step community. Mm-hmm. There's the whole, I've recovered from alcoholism and now I live this weird spiritual life, I guess. Cool, I'm in. Like I grow over time and I have this weird magical life. And then I have other people that are doing that too. And I make friends and like, oh my God, this is cool. And we build these communities together. And then we have the ones of like, hi, I'm recovered and I'm offering the help to someone who hasn't yet got a solution in their life. Mm. And in that space, you do see a lot of people like, I know for me, I'm guilty of early on getting very involved in people's lives. You know, like there's right. a balance between, okay, I can go to family court with you. Yeah, I can support you in that. Or I can go to family court with you and I'll tell you this and I'll tell you this and this is what you should do and run all your decisions by me. Don't forget to call me in the morning when you wake up. Yep, when you wake up, 7:05, let's have a call, blah, blah, blah. Like all these weird kind of sponsorship structures in those early days, because there's like, I wouldn't call it a hierarchy, but there's an energetic difference between somebody who is not in that panic state and then somebody who is. And we can't take advantage of that dynamic. Like I can't be like, I'm gonna save you. Like yeah. weird. I'm just a human.
Cringe.
Who should be dead. Yeah, that's the thing. Like bridge, man. Like build that bridge out of toothpicks if you have to, but just build that bridge. And it's like, I'm a human who has weirdly recovered from this thing that was going to kill me. I should not be alive today. That's amazing. I get to offer this help to other people, but it's instructions and experience. You know, it's not like, it's not life coaching. It's not getting in the details, and it's not doing a weird, like, let me make your decisions for you because you can't trust your own mind right now. Like I know it's chaos right now, and let's build these instructions and like, I can help bounce some stuff off you. And like, you've got this community here, let's go help people together, like all that kind of energy, and then just watch the life calm down around them.
Yeah for sure. I had go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna ask, did you enjoy the kind of sponsorship where you were running someone's life, or did it like make you anxious? Because I was just gonna say, I don't think I would be sponsoring people if I had to run people's lives. I'd be like, no thanks, let's not say we did.
It stressed me out. It did. Like, because I always felt unqualified. Like I did. And I would often caveat my advice at the beginning with a weird sense of like, I would make a joke. I'm like, I'm a corporate strategist. I don't know what I'm doing. You don't want me to strategize your life. Like, you know, I kind of like, I
but
would make
since
a joke
asked.
About it. Exactly. That's what it would be. It would be a like, ha ha ha. But what you should do. Right. And then I would give these weird like 45 minute phone calls. And like, I'm an opinionated woman. Like I am not in any way even remotely perfect at anything to do with life. Like seriously, I am clumsy and flailing about. I got my own stuff going on, and it's a joy and a horror. It's like, it's life. And it's like, I don't know. I remember those early days, and I would literally like be on the phone, and I thought that's what you did. I thought you would like listen to someone's, you know, complaints about everything and blah blah blah. And like, I would do that step four work like balls deep with them. Like, let's just hash this out with you. And I would like, but what about this? What about this? Have you thought about this? And I would like really actively participate in every resentment, or really active and like almost like I was being there prompting like fake God voice. Like I was putting on a robe and pretending to be Jesus. I don't know, whatever I was doing, but like, I don't know if Jesus did that. Actually, that's a bad example. I doubt he would have given people love advice.
Like, oh, I thought you meant put on a robe.
Oh, no.
Pretty sure the robe is established canon in the Jesus cinematic universe. So I keep thinking about this time when it was my first go through AA. And I was, I don't know, this is a long time ago. This is either late 90s or like early 2000. And I was through the steps and I was sponsoring people, and there was, there was definitely a culture at like the clubhouse where I like hung out all the time. That is kind of what we're talking about, where it's like, you kind of like, you go to a lot of meetings and you kind of go to meetings to hear like the people who have been going to meetings every day for 30 years talk in a way that then you try to aspire to kind of sound like that. And like, now I live in that town again, and I will go to meetings at that same clubhouse sometimes, and it's the same fucking people doing the same shit. This like Hallmark greeting card Reader's Digest kind of like, you know, like the Paul Harvey kind of share, where they like sum everything up in this like heartwarming way. And it's like, I'm sorry. I'm pretty sure the fourth step was the topic. And like, you just did a whole fucking like all these kooky homespun aphorisms and like this cute sounding shit. It's just like, what the fuck was that? But, and that was kind of like the culture. And it was like, it was very much like, well, here's what you should do and this and that and blah, you know, if you're new and do this, and somebody would like trauma dump, and then people would be like, okay, well, let me clean that up, and here's, you know, and you need a blah, blah. And it's just like, oh my God, dude. But, and this is kind of my perspective back then, my experience back then, looking back on it, of what I was talking about earlier, where it's like people who I meet now seem to be so ensconced in that culture and in that like rhythm and in like, that's what we do. That's what AA is. And I was one of those, right? One of those people where it's like, that was what I was looking for too. And it's like, at a long enough timeline, it stopped working for me because I wasn't like, I had no working experience of 10 and 11 at all, right? So I'm operating off this experience I have is very profound of steps 1 through 9, and I'm taking that into sponsorship. And I'm not doing any of the stuff you were talking about on this inventory side, where I'm like, because a big piece for me of the inventory, and I love it on like, I think it's like page 76, where it says like, they took inventory all right, but they never, you know, experience the humility that comes from sharing this with someone. And I think part and parcel with that is like this, having this reflected back through another human being who empathizes with you because they've experienced this stuff, or they've experienced that similar character defect, you know, in some other scenario. And they can say like, yeah, A, you're not a fucking freak or a lunatic. B, let's look at what that looks like in terms of character defect so that we can have some stuff to surrender to whatever this thing is in step 6 and 7. Like, it helps me learn the function, right? And it's the same thing in step 10, where I'm just like, I think that that's a piece a lot of people miss in step 10, where it's like, they take inventory all right, the ones who do, but maybe like, I don't fucking talk to anybody about this, right? Like, and like you guys are talking about that was beautiful. It's my experience with that as the sponsor back then when I was sponsoring that way that you were describing, the thing that keeps coming to mind is this guy I was sponsoring calls me one morning, and I was like, I don't know, at Denny's or something. And I happened to be at Denny's with his sister, because we were all friends. And as I was like, oh, he's calling, she was like, oh yeah, he's got some news. Or I was like, oh shit, what the hell? And I was like so involved with these people's lives, right? That like, I take this call from this guy, and he tells me basically, short version, he hooked up with this person the night before, and I guess his sister had known about this. And I basically told him like, wow, you know, that's like the worst person you could have chosen to do that with. Like I said that to this person, right? And I'm like 19 or 20 at the time. But I'm like, I'm essentially brainwashed into thinking it's any of my fucking business, right? By this culture that this local AA group had sort of like fostered, right? And because I'd become a part of it. And at that point, I had been regurgitating it and recycling it and perpetuating that, right? And the reason I'd said that is because like this was someone who had been with a whole bunch of people, right? And like there was drama. But it's like, still, this isn't any of my fucking business, right? And like within 2 months, they were married and pregnant. It's like, and like, as far as I know, they're still married and have kids and they're happy, right? But like, wow. Like I am like, so it, that was sort of like instant. And like, of course, a week later, he was like, yeah, so I'm going to have this other person sponsor me because they're a little older and, you know, have a relationship and, you know, I can talk to them about stuff like that. And it's like, also kind of like a weird take, but it's like, yeah, you probably should have like slapped me too next time you saw me. You know what I mean? And so like, I have that experience, both people sponsoring me and back then me sponsoring people. And to draw like a direct comparison to recovery, actual step work, actual sponsorship, this thing that happened, it was within my first year, I don't know. My sponsor, still my sponsor today, I was really struggling with like, I don't know, to some people this sounds, I don't know, stupid or whatever, right? But one thing that I've found with sponsoring a bunch of people is that your shit is your shit and it's fucking big to you, right? And it's like, I could hear inventory, or perfect example, I could hear an 8-step list and be like, shit, cool. So like 72 hours, we're done with this, right? You know, and then they just go away forever because they're like terrified of it. And I'm like, brother, that was like nothing, right? But for them, that's their shit. It's this big thing for them. And so I had this big thing going on where it was like, I was struggling with food like a lot. I wasn't like, you know, binging and purging, and it's the same trappings of like any addictive activity or addiction or alcoholism, where you kind of compare yourself and you're just like, well, I'm not destitute, you know, it's the same kind of thing, right? But I was having this broken record experience, and I'd write inventory and I'd go to 11 and, you know, go try to get the, like, you kind of alluded to this earlier, Millie, get the like heroin quick fix of like, I'm going to go sponsor somebody. I'm going to go sponsor the fuck out of this person. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, just like immediately like shoot me up with some of that God juice or whatever. Right. And I'd been doing all that stuff, and he and I, in a rare moment, went to some meetings together. And when he was giving me a ride back home, and we were going, and I was just like, yeah, I just like, I feel uncomfortable, you know, like I don't feel right in my body. I just feel like I'm just eating like shit. And it's just like, it's kind of like making me useless. And like, I don't know what to do, you know? And this, the only thing that he said was like, maybe feeling uncomfortable is God. And it was like just a small suggestion. He was just like, maybe, you know, if we think about this, like God is everything or God is nothing, maybe that discomfort is you being nudged to fucking do something, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was as simple as that. And like, it opened a whole different thing for me to be able to look at these things that come up in inventory over and over again in a different way. Mm. Because instead of like trying to solve the problem and figure it out and be like, or even to be like, okay, what character defect and this and that, and what's, no, dude. Like, it's just like, I know for sure something, whether it's like biological, chemical, spiritual, existential, whatever, something is saying you right now are sitting in discomfort, and like apparently with all of your efforts you can't figure it out, right? Something needs to happen. You need to move, you need to change. It's got to happen, right? And it was like the impetus for me to be able to take it seriously, and also to stop meddling with it, to stop being like, let me fucking figure this out, right? Because I'm fucking spinning my wheels. And there have been like time after time, there's been realizations for me like that in 10 steps where I'm just like fucking lost. And the person who I turn to doesn't try to help me find myself or find my way. They just go like, oh, what if you consider a new angle? And then they just like let me go do that, you know? And it's a totally different experience than someone being like, I mean, fucking get in. You know what I mean? Get in the back, yeah. Loser. We're going, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a totally different thing.
Yeah, I don't need somebody to come in and workshop my life with me. Like, mm-hmm. And I think that's like an energy sometimes. Like, I know I had an old sponsor who used to get, like, she would see things in me that I didn't always agree with. Yeah. Like, I had a similar experience with, I was a lot heavier than I am now, and I wasn't eating particularly well. I've never identified as a food addict, but I definitely had unhealthy patterns, and I didn't feel good about myself. Mm-hmm. And it was a reflection of, you know, I'm not looking after myself. Maybe I could do better. And when I applied human power to that situation, it worked. You know, so I mm-hmm. didn't have a sense of unmanageability in that regard, but I definitely had my own prompts. And I found that, interestingly, when she would tell me things about me, like, I would either hard reject it and be like, nope, that's not right, or I would go, oh, maybe she is right. And it didn't get into my own self-reflection stake. And so it kind of, it hijacks my own spiritual experience, because all of a sudden I'm not being encouraged to say, oh, is that true for me? Where is that? Because someone's telling me what they see in me. And we had a funny dynamic where she would often do that, and she would say, I know you better than you know yourself. I'm like, do you? It was that uncomfortable feeling. And same thing about, like, I remember, you know, she made a comment about how much money I was spending, and I'm like, okay. And I don't think I was, you know, it was just funny little meddling moments. And as humans, we can observe everybody, right? You can see someone and be like, oh, this is not right about their life. If you've got that judgment mindset, you can see somebody and you can judge their relationships. You can hear their anger issues. You can hear their rudeness to wait staff or whatever. And it's like, shut up. Like, I don't need to tell them. I don't need to say, excuse me, it appears that you have an issue with anger and we need to talk about this. Like, right. I'm not a spiritual counselor. And I've noticed that a little bit in some AA circles, and I've had experience of that, and I've had people, it almost feels like an intervention about my character. And I live loud. I'm feisty. I like who I am. I'm not going to brush well with everyone. I don't need feedback on that. You know what I mean? Like, it's a weird dynamic to be in the world, in the rooms of AA, giving each other character development feedback. And I don't know if you guys have that in your meetings, but there was a group I was involved with for a while that was very much all about like that step 11 process. They, you know, we would call it step 11 buddies, and you would write down your step 11 nightly review and then share it with each other. Yeah. Holy shit, that was a dynamic. So it was like all of a sudden I'm writing down, I'm spending 45 minutes writing a weird book report on my day, and then I'm reading somebody else's, and then we're having a chat about it, and I'm giving her feedback about that guy in the office that she had a little tete-a-tete with. Tete-a-tete, is that the word? She had a little, like, flirtatious exchange near the water cooler with, and I'm giving her feedback on that moment. And I'm like, and you catch yourself, and you're like, what am I doing? This is uncomfortable and weird. Like, it's a funny little dynamic. And I think that it does a weird fake version. Do you guys have Clayton's over there, the fake alcohol?
No.
No, I'm just consumed, like, wondering if Susan from Accounts Receivable is going to hear this and be like, ooh, hang on.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned to episode 2. I know, right? What's going to happen?
Exactly. Like, broke my tete-a-tete, an anonymity.
I know, right? I like to just slip French phrases into my weird anecdotes. Like, Clayton's is a fake alcohol brand. We would sell it the Clayton's version of something. And it's like, you can do a Clayton's version of a spiritual experience where we rely on each other and we do this weird sense of not drinking today and please help me with all my decisions. Now I've got a community of people because I don't trust my stinking thinking and I need other people to like help me guide my life. And you end up in this kind of funny little enmeshed ball of I need a meeting today. I need to go to a meeting. And this funny, I don't know, it's a funny weird like dynamic
makes my
that
stomach
I've seen.
Hurt.
I know, but I've been in that and I've definitely been in that sense of like, ooh, inviting, like giving people spiritual permission to intervene in my life. And it's like this idea, like I love the spiritual appendix in the back of our book. And it talks about for some people, it happened like instantly and they had these sudden revolutionary changes. And then other people, it was this slow opening and progression. But there was that, you know, like change, the change in the way we react to the world will change in the way we are internally and the way that kind of then imprints on the world externally. And like these amazing changes happen in us when we apply these principles to the, you know, our way of living. And that's the magic and the wonder. And that is the really cool process that's a byproduct of living this step life. And if we try to kind of intervene in other people's version of that, we're robbing them of that experience. We're robbing them of the ability to have their own sense of like, should I leave this man? Yeah, maybe I should. It's scary, but maybe I should. Or should I change my career? Yeah, you know, or should I move states with my little boy? Or should I do like, should I, you know, meet this random guy for a coffee? Or should I cut all my hair off? Like little things, big things, everything
I, by
in
the
between.
By the way, I did meet him and it was weird.
You did?
Yeah, we had coffee.
You did? Was it a nice coffee? Was it a like a skim latte?
He said my coffee order gave him the ick.
I was gonna, as a sidebar, Americans have the shittest coffee. Like your coffee is just horrifying. Like the worst. The worst.
I
say this as someone who has spent many months troiling the lands of your great country.
I don't fuck with coffee, so I don't know.
Coffee sucks.
Coffee fucking sucks, punk.
Sucks. Your weird, like, filtered stuff. Like, come on, get on the espresso train.
I don't know
for
what
goodness
any of this
sakes.
Is. I know nothing about
Yeah,
coffee.
Well, that's my other rant.
I use a French press, so I don't know.
Still not good enough.
I don't know if you, I'm like seeking your approval here on this. What kind of coffee should I drink, Billy?
Espresso, ground beans. Yeah.
What if I don't have an espresso machine at home? So, like, I'm trying to get my head around this because I keep wondering, like, people say I need a meeting and I'm like, what do the meetings do? You might have answered my question. So, like, I'm trying to put these pieces together. So you choose the group as your higher power. The group becomes like this kind of like focus group for solving people's problems for them. And then you go to meetings because that's your higher power. And then am I overthinking this? I've actually never been to a meeting where people focus grouped your problems like that.
I guess that's the energy. I know I've been to a bunch of meetings where, you know, good old Ray comes in and starts banging on about his wife's bad week.
Good old Ray.
I've been to those.
Job, yeah. But it's like,
but I've never heard like.
That's the energy of.
Yeah. But then people like give
often,
them advice.
Like, yeah, I think afterwards people come up to me.
Oh, at the diner.
Like, oh,
yeah, yeah.
And they
yeah.
have, you know, the chat. And then it's sometimes it's that weird venting process of, well, that's my step 10. I shared it with another person. It's like, yeah. I shared my birthday from the floor. And
gross.
It's like, I don't know if they would even call it a step 10, but there's that mentality of like support group, right? It is. It's that.
Yeah,
and
it's like I go and I get it out. And then.
Okay.
Yeah, and other people are like, yeah, went down to the meeting hall. I helped that new guy, you know, because like I could go fucking, what time is it? Tonight, I could go to a place place I was talking about earlier still and hit a meeting where I guarantee you there are people in there who are like dumping their problems, and then other people are like in their shares during the meeting helping them with their problems, in quotes.
Well,
not necessarily.
That's, it's the second part that I haven't seen. That's
not necessarily maybe like, here's what you should do, but it's like, it's more like, yeah, when I was sober early, a similar thing happened to me, and you know, what you got to do is you got to blah, blah, you know what I mean? It's like, you have to approach this way, and you got to do, you know, it's just like, I mean, like, I've heard people like talking about like getting into sober houses, like all kinds of like, life guidance type stuff. But one thing that I'm curious about is you guys having, like, recently having had experiences, like I was talking about earlier, where you have, you meet a new prospect and you're getting into this thing with them, and it becomes like more and more apparent that they're just like, they're wanting something more, and by more I mean less, because it's like, I'm literally like offering you the keys to the fucking kingdom here, you know, like I'm offering you like this path to have your own thing, right? And like, I wonder how you guys have navigated that, because that is usually what I default to over and over and over again, is like, I'm a resource. I'm an uninvolved third party. Should you need someone who's not going to be personally affected by your, like, you know, complaints and grievances, your problems, like hearing about whatever's going on, by all means, use me as a sounding board. But my intention and motivation and only purpose here is to help you get rid of the shit that blocks you from like a higher understanding and a different way to function in the world. And like, I try to be as clear as I can about that. And so I wonder what you guys, what your experiences have been with that.
I mean, yeah, I'm as clear as I can be, but I think people don't hear me, or they think that I'm being irresponsible as a sponsor. They're like, well, you're not supposed to do that, you know? Or they're like, you're not going to tell me I can't date in the first year. Like, you just don't care about me. Like, I think people really do want that kind of sponsorship sometimes, because they think that that's what a sponsor is. And if you're not offering them that, they're like, oh,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. Or more specific to the burning desire, even, like, cause what I do with prayer is we will do a third step prayer, and I will do this exactly how the book says to do it. I will tell them, you don't have to even say these words. The book says you don't. You need to express the idea, which means you need to understand what it is, and you need to do it without reservation. Like, this is not a half-assed thing. We're committing to a process here, and we're committing, I got you on the back end, we're committing to help other people through the process, right? So that's the only place where I see fear until the fourth step, or sorry, prayer until the fourth step. And then the fourth step, we start looking at some more prayer. The sick man prayer, the asking God to remove our fear, direct our attention, what do you have us be? And then some prayer and the sex ideal type stuff, right? And when we get there, I will always clarify, this book, in going in order, right, it doesn't give you any sort of direction for like a daily prayer life or structure or framework, whatever you want to call it. So whatever, and this is the way I always say this, whatever your prayer looks like right now, now that we're at the sex ideal and the fifth step, like, just start working this into it. It doesn't give you direction on how to do it. It just says, ask God for to mold your ideals and help you live up to them, right? So just do that. And I think that like that's really the place where it starts to diverge in my experience with sponsorship, because I am literally saying, I am not going to tell you how to pray. I don't know how you need to be praying. The book doesn't presume to know how you need to be praying. Certainly not at this point. All it says is ask for this ideal, ask for the ability to live up to it, right? So like, that's all I'm going to say that you should do. I'm just going to suggest that. Work that into your daily life, however you work it into it, right? Because what we're going to do is we're going to move forward, and then we're going to get some structure. And then also within that structure later in the steps that we've been talking about, there's so much room to do all kinds of other stuff. And it's like, because we start at step five there, like talking about, hey, the book's not giving you specific direction on exactly what to do here. I think that's where the divergence comes, because you could be on step fucking negative 100 in your first AA meeting ever as like a medical student there to observe and be quiet and not participate. And some fucking dude with like a toothpick in his mouth will come up and be like, hey, man, you don't want to end up like me. You got to quit now for good. Alcohol is poison. You're going to kill your family. You know, this whole fucking thing. And it's just like, you're just sitting there like, what the fuck is happening? You know, and it's like, put your boots under the bed at night. So then you'll be on your knees and you'll pray in the morning when you get your boots. And I'm just like, I can reach under my bed without being on my knees. Anyway, way off topic, but.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
Right.
My face down on your bed. That's the proper way to pray.
Yeah.
Y'all are doing
face
it
down
wrong.
On your bed, arms to your side, body taut as a board. Humming the national anthem.
Which national anthem?
There's no direction. It's open. Ooh. It's open. That's where it's open. But no, I'm just like, I think that that's really where like I see the divergence start to unfold, because to me, the beautiful thing about the steps in that area of the book is like, okay, and now you're at six. Go do six and seven. I won't be here for this. Enjoy yourself. Mm. Bye. Go have an experience. Establish a relationship with whatever the fuck it is you believe in or don't. It's like that type of sponsorship, which I believe is what the book tells us to do, is very much like, see ya. Enjoy your own experience. And I think that that is the whole point of like the Burning Desire and the program is like, this is your thing. It's not my thing. You know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I mean, if you go, I love there's a part in working with others and it lays out this kind of rhythm of how to talk to people. And the steps one to three conversations are often organic. And then you learn about them and you talk about you. And you know, obviously back then they would get involved in each other's families as well. And there was this space of like presenting what we have, what I am, see if there's resonance, and that real space of like, this is what happened to me. I have recovered from this. And this is the, you know, this is the idea of spirituality. Do you want to know more? And then it's that voluntary aspect of like, yeah, I'm in. And so I know for me, when I do take people through the steps, like the ones that want life coaching don't come to me or like arrive to me or like stay long, or that first conversation, it becomes very apparent. Like I seem to get two types. I seem to like work with people who are either pretty fresh. Like I do a lot of, I don't go to traditional AA meetings. I go to the detoxes, the prisons, the like, I love that, like the hospitals, like, and so when I meet people in those spaces, it's like, help me, like, help me. I'm not hearing the like, keep coming back. I'm not involved in like all the day-to-day kind of meeting stuff. They're just like, I want a solution, I'll do it. And like, it's that organic, I'm in pain, you know, bring it, I'm ready. And so it's either that kind of person, or I often meet people who like, sometimes I'm, you know, I don't know how they work in your weird country, but in my weird country, we do like guest speaker spot things where it's like, you'll go to like an H&I hospital institution kind of, you know, you're on rosters and it's like, you'll turn up and you're the guest speaker and there's usually one other person with you. And I've had a whole bunch where the other person with me at the end of that meeting will talk to me about their sponsorship style and be like, I need help. And it's like, because they're stuck in the life coaching, they're stuck in that kind of culture of, I've been doing the steps and I've been doing them for a year and my sponsor won't let me, you know, sponsor anyone else. They won't let me date. They won't let me say that I need to go to X amount of meetings every week. They say that I need to call them every day. They say that I need to fill in these worksheets. And like, okay, maybe that does work for some people, but I've met a lot of people who are like, I can't, like, they'll hear maybe me share directly based on, you know, like the way you said, John, about the book lays it out very clearly and directly. And it's about that personal experience. And you kind of hear the intrigue when, you know, in their voice, and they'll ask me after the meeting and be like, can you help me? Like, so they're usually the two kinds of people I end up working with. It's either the front lines. Sometimes I get a bunch. I've had a whole bunch that have never been to an AA meeting, and they're my favorites.
That's awesome.
Oh my God. It's like, yeah, they're my little green fields, you know. It's like, cool. And I can like sit there and go, let's get you into a solution. And then you can go to AA meetings to help people. Yeah. You know, it's like, that was my other, like, I was tossing up. I was telling Jane, you know, yesterday, I'm like, I had two burning desire ideas, and I went with that one because that was, I don't know, the one that burnt the hardest, needed the cream the most. The other one I wanted to do was go out and get them. Like, yeah, our book tells us to proactively go out and get them. And all the way, like, you know, in working with others, in A Vision for You, like, there's examples of like going to like the local hospital or going to the rehab, like going to the psychiatrist, going to the GP, going to the minister, like whatever. And it's like seeking out the people on the front lines that really need it. And I think the problem with going to meetings again and again is that we do meet people that want free life coaching. Yeah. We do. Like, and no, like, I don't know, I can be articulate and I probably, maybe I do give good life advice, I don't know, but like, you don't want me as your free unqualified life coach. Like, right, that hijacks this beautiful magic that these steps give us. Like, you want that sense of growth within yourself. You want that like intuition to grow, and you want that feeling of like, I know what to do. Like, that's the magic. We don't want this propped up culture of need a meeting, need a meeting. Like, it's a funny little support group culture that I just, I don't know, like, maybe that works for some people. And I think the thing about these spiritual experiences, and they look different for everybody. And like, when we've had it, the whole life changes, right? And Alcoholics Anonymous is about alcoholism, right? It's about alcohol. It's in the title. And it's like, I'm there to help other people to recover from alcoholism. And then the weird solution happens to be a spiritual experience about your whole life. Like, yeah, and that's magical and incredible. And out in the world, like, be that person. Go join the Flying Spaghetti Monster group. Go join like a church. Go join a volunteer group that feeds the homeless. Go like start a meditation group. Like, you can do it with a bunch of people you meet in AA. Do whatever you want. Like, that's exciting and cool. And that's your whole life opening up. And that is the, like, join a support group if you like that. Join whatever you want. Like, grow that spiritual experience out in the world. That's amazing and exciting. But the rooms of AA are, like, supposed to be, in my opinion, like one alcoholic helping another, you know, like, or a community of recovered alcoholics helping people who are dying. Like, I just, you know, in A Vision for You, it talks about, like, you know, people are helplessly dying for this thing. There's a line in that says, if you're in a large city, there'll be hundreds. We know there's often, you know, much more than that. Like, this is a disease that literally, an illness, whatever you want to call it, that robs us of life, and it causes incredible pain. And that's the front lines of it. And it's really cool that you don't drink anymore and that you're a member of AA, and whether you're happy about it or not, and you've got this support group. But like, go take that outside. Like, you know, go do that magical fun, you know, like, go talk about your problems in a group setting, but don't call it AA. Yeah. You know, like, make the solution, and then everything else, I don't know. That's my soapbox. I'm just a random Australian with an opinion, but that is definitely my soapbox. And I will die on that hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love it. What about you, Jane?
Oh, I have a story that you guys might like, because we were talking about like how we used to sponsor versus how we sponsor now. It's a quick story.
No, go for it.
The second guy I ever tried to sponsor.
Well, there's your problem.
No. Yeah, right. I was just getting nowhere
men
with
men,
this person.
Women for women.
Because this person, you know, like, I would try to talk to this person, and they would just talk. And I couldn't get a word in edgewise. And, you know, this person didn't really stick around, kind of dropped out on their fourth step, really dropped out on steps 8 and 9.
She's talking about me. That's why she keeps saying this person.
John, I'm not making eye contact right now. You guys
I can feel the tension in the room. You should feel it, guys.
I'm so uncomfortable right now.
But it was frustrating, like, trying to explain things to this person. Because I was like, this person is just not hearing me. This person came back recently. And I was trying to talk to them, having that like steps one through three conversation, something went wrong with my headset or with their headset or whatever, because every time I tried to talk, I could hear my own voice echoed back at me at like three times the volume. And I was like, I can't do this. Like, I don't know what's going on. And I'm too embarrassed to say anything about it. So I just wrote it out and I just didn't talk. Like the first two or three times I met with this person to go through steps one through three, I didn't talk. And then it dawned on me, I didn't need to talk. Like this person had been in and out of recovery so many times. They practically had the steps and all the information about it memorized. Mm-hmm. I was like, this person just needs their own process. They need to hear themselves talk through it. The only thing this person needs from me is for me to say, okay, that's great. Let's wrap it up. Let's move on. That's it. That was all this person needed. And I wasted so much time like trying to fucking explain. It was like trying to cram, I don't know, it was like trying to pour water into glasses like already full, you know. It's like it was pointless. But you know, I have experiences like that in sponsorship every now and then where I'm like, oh, I see.
Yeah.
You know, this person needed less.
Yeah.
Not more.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's the thing of just like creating a problem by trying to fix it.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember that. Early sponsorship for me was a lot of talk. I mean, I talk a lot baseline. And early sponsorship for me was a lot of me explaining or trying to convince and almost like force an educational variety of spiritual experience on someone. And it's like, I reckon 97% of my own spiritual growth has been learning to shut up.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, and I feel like when I look back on that, like, cause you know, it's good to like reflect and be like, have I just become jaded or lazy? And just like honestly be like, have I, is that, you know, and I think it's really more what you're just talking about right there. Cause like, the shit that I do now is just like, it's the directions and their success have been borne out by watching people do them or not do them. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's one or the other. People do all of it and get the thing, or they do some of it or none of it and don't get the thing. Like, it's just like what happens. So when I show up, like literally the less of me there is, the better. Yeah. Especially because, like, you know, you keep kind of making self-deprecating comments. Especially like, I can be a lot, dude. Like, I'm a fucking goofball. And I mean, like, I'm not doing like a podcast performance, you know, one-on-one with someone where I'm like goofing off and telling jokes or whatever, but like I am a very annoying person. Like, I'm a sweet person, I'm a kind person, I'm a helpful person, but I am also like a very annoying person. I annoy the shit out of a lot of people who I meet. And like, that's fine, whether it's like just how I look or like the fucking shirts I wear or whatever, like different things, you know, like the jokes I make, my sense of humor. I'm aware of that. And I'm like, I get it, whatever. Hey, different types of people, right? And like in sponsorship, like not just that reason, but mainly the whole conceit of this entire episode, but like the less of me, the better. It's just like show up and like, so when I look like in aggregate, when I look at like what I do now versus what I used to do, it really is. It's like, what was I trying to like sell someone on something? Like, what the fuck was I doing with a lot of that, you know? Yeah. Because all of those people, they either fucking just did it or they didn't do it. And like,
so true.
I think about the ones who like, you know, recovered back then, who like are still recovered, but had to endure so much more of me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, God bless you, dude. You know, it's funny.
Actually, I've got a handful of, I even hate the term sponsee. It's weird, right? Like, it's an official title. I'm a sponsor and they're a sponsee. But, like, I've got a handful of people who I, like, start. Like, I've got my second ever sponsee. I'm still her sponsor, I guess. But it's, like, we're just kind of colleagues in this now. Yeah. We're spiritual colleagues. But it's like, it's cool to look back and be like, fuck, I talked at her a lot in the beginning. And now when we talk as humans, and it's cool to see the like the iterations and the change over time. And like, I love that, John. I'm a lot too, and I like it. I'm like, I like being a lot. I'm saying it, but I'm not apologizing. Like, right. I'm not everyone's cup of tea. It's like, not everyone likes chocolate, you know? Like, I'm not chocolate, and not everyone even likes chocolate. I can't make my personality palatable to sell this thing. You know, sure. It's weird. Like, I can't become Miss Circuit Speaker that says the exact right things, and I can't be the lightning bolt that cuts through someone's heart. You know, like, yeah. It's weird. I'm just a random human in the world that this worked for. And I know I get really excited because I'm like, fuck, this, I still can't believe this worked for me. Like, right. I have absolute awe and wonder over that because I was genuinely convinced I was too hard. I was genuinely convinced that I had a weird form of alcoholism that no one else had, and that my life was so complicated and it would never unravel. And I look back to when I first, you know, started these steps and putting this way of life into practice. And I was completely consumed with how hard it was and how impossible it was. And it was like, this is not going to work for me. It's not. And it wasn't just a fear. It was a fact. And it was within me. And I'll do it because I've got nothing else to do. And for some reason within me, I didn't have the courage to take my own life, if you want to call it that. Like, I had this space of like, I am nothing. I am empty. There is nothing in me. Like, I cannot do this life, but I also can't end this life. And I guess I'll do this. Like, it was just this destitute space within my spirit. And I look back and I have a clear memory of being her because I meet her again and again and again in endless people. And I don't forget that space. And it feels physical in my memory. Like, I feel it in my body right now. Like, I remember being like, this is not going to work. I'm too broken. I am too lost. And to look back on this funny stumbling around spiritual experience that I've had and to sit here today on a Sunday morning with, you know, with two beautiful, wonderful people talking shit about recovery. Like, it's, I have this life today and it worked. Like, it really worked. And I learned the hard way that I have to do this full in. I can't dabble. I tried dabbling and it worked for a few years until it didn't. And now looking at this life, I do an 11 every night. Like, John, you inspired me with that. I remember talking to you and like, you were like, yeah, I just, this is just what I do. I don't miss it. And I don't miss it either. Like, I love that it's what I do now. And I do the scaffolding that gives me a spiritual experience. It's so weird, but I do it. And then because I do it, I get the results. It's so weird. Like, I do have to participate. So I'm not the power, but I'm the action. You know, I do have to actually participate in this thing. And I get so excited about the fact that this worked. Like, I'll go, you know, you go to a prison, a rehab, a hospital, whatever, and you sit down with a bunch of people that have this face that was my face, you know, that spirit that was my spirit. And I just want to say to them, oh my God, please come on this with me. Like, it does work. And I want to, my heart means well. And I want to like wrap the world up. I want to be mama bear to the whole planet. And I want to share this incredible life that I've been given. And unfortunately, that's not how the world works. Right. Everybody has their own magical way. And sometimes that's dark and heavy and heartbreaking. And other times it's free, but that's the nature of human agency, you know, and that's what our book emphasizes again and again. We lay these spiritual tools at their feet. We give them the toolkit and then we go, okay, I work this. I do this. My effort is in putting this into practice in my life and in offering it to you, but I can't be in the, you know, in that investment in what you do with it. And then hopefully they do it, you know, and I think it's in, the Vision for You chapter, and it said something like, half of their number would get well or something like that. And that, I don't know about you guys, but I don't see half. I don't see half in our areas. Like, people disappear and they come and they go and they flow in and they flow out. And I reflect sometimes and I wonder about that person I met 6 months ago or 6 years ago or whatever it might have been time-wise. And I think about, like, I have people that have come back and I've met them years later, and I hand out little origami, I do origami paper cranes. Like, I just do them because I get, I know my fingers get restless and I like, I find it quite relaxing. And I give them out. I give them out to random people in the world too, because I make so many of them. It's ridiculous. But I just, I'll be in a rehab and sometimes I'll just give them out. And I had this guy come up to me and I started sponsoring him after I met him in a rehab a while back. And then he disappeared. I had no idea what happened to him, as you know, we often do. He's in the world and your heart feels the imprint on him and you just hope somehow he finds this thing. And then a couple of weeks ago, this random rehab, there he was. And he was like, I've still got it. I've still got that little crane. Like, it sits on my fridge. And it was like, not to say I'm amazing, it sounded really weird and braggy, but what I mean is, like, we get this opportunity to have these tiny little sprinkles on people's lives. And who knows what that means? And, like, for the kind of brokenness that alcoholism offers and that the, like, the stranglehold that selfishness has on us when we're stuck in it. Like, I know I had that for years and years and years and years. Like, so much of my life was taken up with that. Like, all my prime youth years, all my hot girl years were taken up being creepy and drunk, you know? Like, I didn't have hot girl summer. I'm sorry you didn't have hot girl summer, John. You would have made a great bikini model. But
it's not too late.
It's not too late. That's true. Chase your dreams. 87, you can do it. But you know, you kind of look back and you go, I get to have that, like, it's a crazy life that I get to have this little moment in someone and hope they're okay, but it's theirs. It's theirs. And that's the biggest gift, I think, as people who have recovered, that we can give people who are in that state, is not to have expectations, is to work hard not to give them a requirement that you do this thing. And even things like sponsoring, saying you have to call me at this time, you have to do this, if you don't do this I'm going to drop you, or like it's some kind of weird like course that you have to pass. Like, no, make the friend, man. Offer us, you know, like, it's just, I don't know, I get really, my heart gets really attached to these beautiful people, and that's my work. You know, my work between me and God is, like, I have a delusion that I think that everyone should be well, and I think I have a delusion about what well looks like. I have a script about what the world should be. If it was up to me, I would have, like, gotten rid of all suffering. I would have made everything, like, sunshine and daisies, and that's how I would have designed the world. And it's not a reality. It's not how we are. You know, it's a very naive way of looking at things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love all that. I think that I think about it over and over again. during most episodes, I think about how the biggest thing that my sponsor gave to me was the detachment from the selfishness of trying to make a little miniature version of himself and me, you know. It's like,
yeah,
just literally, here, you do this thing for you, it's going to be your thing. I'm like insanely grateful that that type of person showed up at that moment for me. Consider the alternatives, you know. So that's really the spirit I try to show up in sponsorship. And when it veers off that course, it's like, of course you'll look back with regret, you know, and feel like, unless you're a fucking egomaniac weirdo, I guess, but
or
unless you're fucking perfect, right?
Like me,
right?
Oh, God. But that's the thing, part of me with that, yeah, you know, like the step 11, like, practice at night, that review, that sense of, like, reflecting on your day. I do often reflect on, was I kind and loving? Was I helpful? Like, was there anything? And sometimes there's a prompt where I'm like, I was rude, or I didn't, you know, I cut that person off when I was trying to help them, or I got too meddly. Like, Of course, like, I'm human. I do stupid shit all the time. Like, I'm not supposed to be, it's not a performance review. Like, I'm not supposed to be acing humanity. Like, I'm still a random woman in the world, but it's like, I don't know, it's kind of cool that we have that, because at the end of the day, if I have that spirit of how can I be helpful? How can I be helpful to him? And like, if that's the spirit I'm going into things with and I'm clumsy with it, okay, I'm clumsy with it. Like, you can make an amends for that. You can look to change it in the future. You can model that to someone. You can say, hey, you know what? I gave too much opinion about your life yesterday. That wasn't fair. I shouldn't have done that. This is your life. Like, you've got your own decisions, and we can have those natural conversations, and that's on me to reflect. And, or if I'm laying awake at night worried about a sponsee, like, there's a human worry, of course. Like, I think it'd be really weird if you didn't have some kind of worry. If you had a sponsee who was in and out of, you know, like, institutions and detoxes and being arrested and, like, or their children are crying, all that kind of stuff. And if you're just like, well, that's the spiritual path, and you're doing some kind of weird robotic reaction, probably something wrong with your psychopathy, you know? Like, it's like, we feel things, of course, but it's like, I don't then play God in that power. That's our, you know, that's our kind of calling, is to be, I've got to deal with my fear. What's my fear here? And then that's worked out between me and God, rather than me and that poor person. Like, I don't have to bring their life in it as, you know, a workshop. It's not my job, but it's also, I'm left with the residual humanity, you know, but we've got a process. We've got a way to be. And we've also got a community of people that we can reach out to, and we can ask, like, hey, I'm struggling with this. What do I do to help this person? And I'm really stuck. And I know, like, you know, both of you, I've asked you guys questions about people, like, how do we help each other help each other? You know, it's like, it's really cool to be part of this space of, like, and that's, you know, that's the whole basis of A Vision For You chapter, right? A Vision For You is like, we're a community of people who help people. This is altruism and spirituality. They go hand in hand. That's our solution. Yeah. And I don't naturally do that. It's a learned way, and it's fucking magic, man. Like, what a great way to live.
Hell yeah. Oh, man. What an awesome talk. Are there any burning desires? No, what a great chat. Thank you for doing this.
Do you guys want to workshop some of my relationship problems?
Yeah.
Should we end the episode on that?
Make a list of every interaction you've had today. Send that to me. Oh, wait, it's only 10 a.m. your time. That won't work.
I've already
I'll do today, tomorrow. Just send it to me while I'm asleep, and then we can kind of get in there and tinker around and tweak.
Thank you. Look,
I have
my life, please.
Unlimited time for this. So literally any time of the day and night, as long as it takes.
Awesome. Please be my life coach, Jane. I'm ready.
Oh my God.
I'm ready.
All right, friend.
I'll outsource all my decisions.
Thank you so much. Very, very excellent to see you again.
Oh, I love yous guys.
Love you guys.
So good to see your face.
Has been a podcast greater than yourself.
A podcast greater than yourself was created by recovered alcoholics. All involved in the creation of this podcast are active members of Alcoholics Anonymous who wish to carry the message of our own recovery to those who still suffer. We do not claim to represent Alcoholics Anonymous. All comments are from our own experiences as alcoholics who have recovered by following the directions for the 12 steps found in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for listening.